Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to welcome you to another episode of The Business of Inner Peace. Today, I have a treat for you. I am talking with Suzanne Murray. She is a retired business owner and mother. She has transformed her life's adversities into lessons of strength and positivity. Suzanne's journey from managing a thriving safety gear manufacturing company to overcoming personal challenges such as cancer and loss exemplifies her remarkable fortitude. Her life story serves as a beacon of hope for others facing similar trials. Suzanne's expertise lies in her ability to stay positive amid life's toughest moments. Her experiences with cancer, divorce, and the death of a loved one have not only tested her, but also taught her the vital skill of maintaining a positive outlook. She firmly believes in the power of daily practice and cultivating this skill, emphasizing its role in personal well-being and in uplifting those around her. Through her journey, Suzanne aims to guide and inspire others to find strength and positivity in their own challenges. So get cozy and get ready because we're going to dive into a great conversation.
Welcome to the Business of Inner Peace. I'm your host, Erin Jean, and I'm so glad you're here. Let's pretend we're sitting in my living room enjoying a cup of coffee or tea and getting to know each other just a little better. That's what I love. I love getting to hear your story. I love feeling connected by the spirit of understanding that our stories bring. Today, I'm sharing some of my story, but I hope someday soon you'll be telling me yours. Listen, I know that you're feeling overwhelmed with life and nothing is exactly how you'd like it to be. Your marriage is not what you hoped for. Motherhood is harder than you imagined. And you've lost yourself somewhere in the mix of responsibilities. Well, if you're ready to bring some more peace and joy into your life, reconnect with God who made you and start living a life you love, then grab your cup of coffee or tea and let's dive into today's show.
Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here. How are you doing today?
Hi, Erin. Thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. I'm doing great today.
Yay. I know. It's so fun to get to be together and do this. So if you've heard me before, you know that I love, 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 love hearing people's stories. I think that God made us all so uniquely and differently, and our stories really matter. So if you wouldn't mind just sharing a part of your story of what led you to this space of wanting to write a book and encourage others the way that you do.
I'd really love to do that. I have been told all my life that I should write a book because I've had many adventures, divorce. When I was really young, I got married and that didn't work out so well. But I finally decided that at this point, I have cancer for the second time. And this time it's stage 4. So it's everywhere in my body. I've been dealing with that for 3 years. I've been on chemo for 3 years, oral chemo. And I decided if I don't do it now, it's not going to get done. And I just felt God moving me that I needed to write my story and to write it to encourage other women that they can decide how they're going to handle each crisis that comes into their life. I didn't handle them so well when I was young. I fell apart and I didn't have a personal close relationship with God at the time. So it was pretty devastating. My first husband was very narcissistic and got into drugs and I just couldn't deal with that. So I had to get a divorce. And then I married someone who was responsible and we were together for 21 years and he was out of town on business and had a massive heart attack and died at 53. I happened to be 44 or 45 at the time, and we had between us 5 kids. So that was completely devastating to me. And I had to find a way to pick myself up off the floor. I was pretty much upside down at that point. And I had just, you know, 8 years earlier, I had become closer to God because I had a premature baby. And during that situation, my placenta totally abrupted. And so the baby had no heartbeat and I was bleeding to death. And I knew I was dying at that point. I knew that if something wasn't done immediately, I was going to die. I just knew it. And the baby already didn't have a heartbeat. So it was a very traumatic situation. And I did have a near-death experience during that. And my experience and the baby making it led me to have a close relationship with God, where I trust and lean on God through every situation that happens in my life. So fast forward, my baby had been born. She was 8 years old, my youngest, and my husband died suddenly. So that was completely a traumatic experience for me. I had no idea how to navigate losing your husband. And we both had businesses. We had two businesses and five kids. And I was stunned. I was in a fog. I was stunned and didn't know what to do. But I started praying and through friendships and people helping me, I was able to pick myself up off the floor, and I knew I had to go forward because I had kids and I couldn't totally fall apart. I had to be there for them. So the next situation was, within a year of my husband dying, I married a con man, not knowing that I was marrying a con man. His kids went to my kids' school. I didn't know him, but he started calling me and, "Do you want to have coffee?" and asking me all kinds of questions about my life. And then pretty quickly told me he loved me. And eventually, we ended up getting married. So he had two kids. My older two kids were away, but I had three kids at home. So I found out within 6 months of our marriage that he was a con man. I had done a prenup, and he wanted me to get rid of the prenup because he couldn't love me if the prenup was in between us. So at 6 months of marriage, I refinanced my house. And because I didn't put his name on it, he just threw a fit. And, "I can't love you. You know, prenup's between us. We need to get rid of the prenup," and just on and on like that. I had realized, you know, I hadn't really known him that well when we got married. And I realized that he was very narcissistic. Everything we did had to be about him and on his schedule. So anyway, after the fit he threw when I didn't put his name on my house, then he said we needed to go to counseling. So he picked a counselor. We started into counseling, and it came back to the prenup every time we went to the counselor. And the counselor finally said, "You know, just get over it. She's not going to change the prenup, so get over it." Well, in that series of counseling sessions, I realized that I was in a really bad situation with a person that I didn't know, and I didn't know what to do about it. So I finally decided I can't stay in this relationship because it's very toxic, and he told me to my face he wanted property or money. And so it took me probably 2 years total to get him completely divorced from him and out of my life. And turns out I was number seven. He's done eight and nine already. And so that'll probably be my next book, You know, the wives have a narcissistic sociopath. And how that, what that's like, living with someone like that. I just didn't realize there were people like that in the world. I was so naive to it. And yeah. I was so in such a fog from losing my husband that yeah. I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, I've done a podcast before with a gal that was dealing with a narcissistic husband. And narcissism is such a difficult thing. I think the good news yeah. is more people are actually talking about it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more help and information available than there used to be. But I'm kind of curious. So what do you feel like is the difference for you between dealing with tragedy and loss and difficult things when you were younger versus dealing with it now?
I think when I was dealing with my first husband, he turned out to be narcissistic also. Before we got married, he told me he had brain cancer. And about 6 months into marriage, he told me it was a lie. And so I think I married him because of that. Mm-hmm. Like that was one of the reasons I married him. And so, but when I was raised with, in a happy family, and my mom and dad never fought in front of us. My mom would just do what my dad said. So I had no idea that people like this existed. I just didn't have a clue. And so, when I got older, from the situation I was in with the con man, I'll call him, I did a lot of prayer. And I realized, oh my gosh, when I first was going to marry him, I prayed, but I was just like type A and God, this is what you want me to do. I'm sure this is what you want me to do. So I'm doing it. Without sitting back and waiting and being patient and trying to see if this was what God really wanted. Because usually with narcissistic sociopath type people, everything's in a big hurry because they know that if they wait too long, you're going to figure out what they're about. So they don't wait. They push, push, push. Let's get married. Let's get married. And I fell into that, fell for it. So I think as I've gotten older, I've learned to be a lot more patient. Mm-hmm. And so once I separated from him, it was a lot of years before I ended up getting married again. During that time, so I married him within a year of my husband's death.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give advice to anyone. Don't do anything until at least a year has passed if you lose a spouse. And I did not heed that advice. I had heard it, but I did not heed it. And I think it's really good advice for anyone that has lost a spouse. Other things I've done, and then within 5 years of losing my spouse, I got cancer.
Hmm.
So I went through the con man, then I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And when I told my kids, they were like, Mom, what's going to happen to us? You know? And I said, you know what? God knows I'm a single mom. He knows our situation. I don't know how it's going to work out, but somehow we'll be okay. No, it'll be okay. Well, then I actually had started school because of the con man. I wanted to get a degree in private investigation. Hmm. And they had a program at the University of Washington for that. But you needed a degree to take the certificate. So I thought, well, you know, I can go to school. I can go to a community college and get a 2-year degree and then take that. So that's what I got back to school. Started going to school and loved it. But in the middle of that is when I got cancer. So I went for a year and a half, was diagnosed with cancer, and then had to take a year and a half off going through surgery, chemo, radiation. And then I actually went back to school. And at 53, I finished my degree. I got a bachelor in business management.
Wow.
I had been running my own company for quite a number of years. So I really enjoyed going back to school. So I think that helped me a lot because it was something I enjoyed. That's one thing, a recommendation for people. If you're having a crisis, try and do some self-care, do something you enjoy, start something new, you know, just get engaged with an activity or reading, taking a hot bath, anything that will distract you from whatever the crisis is. And it could be anything. But unless we do self-care, you can just go down a hole of depression and feeling horrible about yourself. And so I know it's hard to lift yourself up, but anything you can do to bring some joy into your life is great. Yeah. And it makes you want to take the next step. Like, I can really do this. I can take a step, one step forward, just get you a little bit further away from the depression or feeling bad about yourself. And sometimes it lifts your esteem, your self-esteem.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that as women, we realize that we can make a difference in our own lives. We don't have to look for someone else to make us happy. We shouldn't look for someone else to make us happy. We should work on ourselves to bring happiness, what makes us happy, into our life. And then we can be more of a whole person in any situation.
Yeah.
And I think it does help with your esteem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So did I hear you right that you ended up getting married again? Is that correct?
Yes, I did. And my husband, okay, so I married the con man. Yes.
Married the con man.
I got a degree. And I dated a little bit off and on, but it was so bad. It was so bad. Yeah. I just thought, it was so crazy that I thought, I can't do this. So I just was single for a long time. And before I got together with my current husband, I spent about 4 years praying and asking God. I said, you know me inside and out. You know everything about me. You know every stitch of my body. You made me. So if you have someone for me, you're going to have to bring them to me because I'm done. I'm not looking anymore. But I don't want to be alone. I mean, I'm a type of person that likes to be with someone, have travel, companionship. So the way that God worked this out is completely a miracle. My son married a gal from Colorado. This gal had moved, at the time we were living in Seattle, she had moved to Seattle because her sister was there. And her sister, my son, met her and they ended up getting together. So when they got married, I met her parents, her mom and dad, and we became really good friends. They would come to Seattle a lot because both their daughters were in Seattle and their grandkids were starting to be in Seattle. So Jill, David, and I became really good friends, and we would go out to dinner, go to the movie, whatever. Well, then a number of years later, Jill was diagnosed with cancer, and within a few months, she passed away. So David was grieving, and during the first year after her passing, he would call me off and on and say, I just can't believe this. I can't get over this. I'm still crying. I don't know what to do. And I would console him and tell him that people had told me at some point, it will never be the same, but you'll have a new normal. You know, you'll be able to drink your coffee in the morning and do your normal, what you normally do, but you might have to do it differently. you know, our whole Christmas celebration changed after my husband died. So you might have to change your life some, but you don't ever want to forget. You don't ever want to lose the memories. You want to be able to talk about your spouse. And so I explained all that to him. Then he had a girlfriend for a little while. And then one day he called me and said, I think I'd like to date. But how would you feel about that? I said, well, you'll have to ask all seven kids and see what they say. So he did. And they said yes. And then we ended up starting to date. And now we've been married. Next in May, it'll be 9 years. And it's been wonderful. Yeah, it's a crazy story. So now our kids, when we got married, our kids would be stepbrother and sister.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're married and they're like, our mom and dad are married to each other, but they're not.
And so their kids are cousins.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so we actually have biological grandchildren together.
Together, yeah.
Yeah.
That's like a twisted weave to web to explain, but
right,
it's kind of cool.
It's just how God can work things out. I mean, and there had to be a lot of different situations that came together.
Yeah.
Our kids had to meet each other. His daughter had to move to Colorado. Our kids had to meet each other. They had to get married for us to meet.
Yeah.
His wife had to pass away, which was a horrible tragedy.
Yeah. Well, and so I'm curious, like, how does your husband then feel about you having cancer, having already lost a wife to cancer?
Oh, that was horrible. When I got diagnosed, they wouldn't let him go with me into the doctor's appointment where they told me that I had stage 4 terminal cancer. So he was pacing in the parking lot at that time. And I was just stunned because I had been 15 years clear of cancer. Mm-hmm. And I thought, at 10 years, I thought, oh, this is great. I made it. I'm a survivor. And then to have someone tell you, you have stage 4. And one of the things that happened when that came about is I had a really bad pain in my back, like at my shoulder, under my shoulder blade. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was because I hit the truck with my shoulder, the truck mirror. Yeah. And I just thought I had hurt my back. But it was very intense. Well, then when I had a scan, it was a tumor that had broken my back. So it was very, very painful. And it had gone out far enough where it was too close to my spinal cord for them to do anything about it.
Yeah.
So I had to just wait with chemo until that tumor pretty much died. But then it doesn't leave the area. It just stays there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I found out. But when I walked out of that appointment into the parking lot, I just fell apart. I fell into his arms and we both just, I said, I have cancer at stage 4. And we both just were in the parking lot sobbing. It was horrible to find that out. And at the time I thought, now I'm 3 years in and I'm sure I asked him and he thought I would be gone in a few months. He really did.
Yeah.
And so my book is called Skidding into Heaven. And I've had so many adventures in my life. Like we became divers after we got married and we went to Australia and we dove the Barrier Reef. I've had so, so, so many adventures. So my whole life I've said, I'm going to skid in when I'm done. And now David says, Sue, you're not going to be skidding in. God's going to have to chase you down.
Well, you're a great example of truly living life every day, right? You're living it up.
Yes.
As much as you have. And I think that's a key takeaway for people is, you know, shifting to how can I live this day to its fullest. I know that for myself, when I've had low days, right? Mm-hmm. All of these things are sort of nice to talk about. But when you're really in the low day, it is so hard to kind of do this for yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, what do you have in place that helps you on those low days?
Well, when I'm on a really low day, and I have them because some of the effects of chemo are not wonderful, and my body, it aches sometimes, and I've been pretty much dealing with that for 3 years. I do have my husband to talk to, and I'm pretty honest with him about saying, you know, I'm hurting today. You know, it's just the way it is, and I know I have to get through it. And, you know, so some days I have a bad day. And that's okay, too. You can have a bad day as long as you try to do something for yourself that day, or try and, you know, reach out to a friend and tell them, I'm having a bad day. And yeah. Maybe you just need someone to come sit with you, or, you know, they're not going to fix it. And you don't want them to fix it because there's nothing they can do. But sometimes it helps just having, knowing that there's someone that cares about what you're going through.
Yeah.
And reaching out, you know, hopefully people can learn to reach out. I had to learn that because the first time I didn't reach out a lot. And it was hard on my kids because I didn't reach out a lot. But reaching out to someone who can listen to you, sit with you, watch a movie with you, do anything. It's good to reach out. Community, I think, is really important when you're going through crisis.
Yeah. I feel like most people that I run into have done some level of personal growth work to be able to have this positive mindset that you've got and mm-hmm. different resources. What would you say, what is like the work that you've done?
Well, one, I went through counseling. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important if someone is truly really depressed or has any kind of domestic violence or living with a narcissistic person who runs you into the ground where you have no self-esteem, think everything's your fault. I think if it's possible, having a counselor is really important to at least have someone to a third party looking at it from an objective view.
Yes.
Someone that's not in the middle of the mud.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. So, and you just reaching out, and hopefully I have a great community around me through my church and my family and friends. So having a community around you, I think you helps, which is hard if you're in domestic violence, because usually the perpetrator wants to keep you away from anyone who could help you. But there are, you know, if you want to get out of it, there's places you can go that will help you navigate trying to get out of a situation that's horrific.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I just to speak into that really quick is there, everything domestic violence, every city's got a resource for domestic violence. Where I live, it's actually called Cora, which I love because it's literally like a girl's name, and I could put that into my phone without anyone realizing that it had anything to do with domestic violence. But all of their resources are free, and those, you know, going to a counselor or going to an entity that offers help for domestic violence, people experiencing domestic violence, they're all a great place to help you identify what's going on. Sometimes you can stumble upon a place that has a really great resource that's going to help you to actually create change. But I feel like if you're just needing the resource to start identifying and naming what's happening, that's a great place to start.
I agree totally. My daughter is a clinical counselor and worked at a domestic violence home where they would bring women from other states so that they got them, they'd bring them and their kids to stay at this place for a year. And they would bring them in and feed them, house them, get them counseling, you know, train them in getting a job. And completely, it was completely where people couldn't take pictures. They didn't know that people were there. And so it got them, you could see when they came in, they were frozen, just frozen. They couldn't make a decision about anything. And over time, through counseling, they were less afraid. And they were able to come out of that trauma of being abused. So I've seen it in practice, and oh, it makes such a difference when they have someone they can go to and someone to help get out of the situation.
Yeah. So for you, it sounds like it was going to counseling and your church network and community that have really helped you kind of tap into a more positive mindset.
Yes. The other thing that I really did that helped me was, a lot of people think they have a big plan. God has a big plan for them. You know, when I retire, when I'm done with school, when I, you know, there's some big, big thing that God's going to have them do. And I realized that there is no big thing to do. It's what you do every day. So I changed my mindset to be, it matters what you do every day. So when I wake up in the morning, I say a little prayer, bring someone, put them in front of me that needs to have some help in some way. Things like when I go to the grocery store, I watch for women that are trying to put their kids in the car, and then they've got the cart. So you get your kids in the car, and then you have to leave to put the cart somewhere. So I try and grab the cart and say, hey, I'll take that for you. Or just opening a door for someone, smiling is a big thing, I think, that really enhances your life and other people's lives. I've had amazing experiences by smiling at someone in the grocery store, and they tell me their whole life story because I seem approachable to them.
Yeah.
Or I'll just say a word or two, but just helping in, it doesn't matter if it's big, you don't have to spend any money. Doing something positive lifts your spirits and lifts your self-esteem.
Yeah.
And if it can be something small. And I try to do it every single day. And I've had amazing, amazing experiences.
Do you feel like that also helps you in what you're dealing with cancer, to feel like you have a purpose?
Completely. Completely. Years ago, for a while, for about 3 years, I would go to the nursing home once a week. And I had a little dog at the time, a Yorkie. And I got it so I could bring my Yorkie to the nursing home. And the people there completely loved seeing a dog because there was no dogs at the nursing home. And I think I made a real difference in some of their lives just by being there on a constant basis. They knew I was going to come every week, and they looked forward to it. So I think anything you do, I know in communities you can, as long as you're willing to go online and try and find things out, there are a lot of people that are shut in nowadays, and COVID has made people isolated, completely isolated. So I know there are programs where you can just call shut-ins. Once a week, call someone just to check in and say, how are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, or in your neighborhood. You know, if there's elderly people, go visit them. I started in my neighborhood with two gals, one's widowed and one, her husband has cancer. And we just go to lunch once a month. And it gets them out of the house and to have some joy and just community for, you know, an hour for once a month. That's not very much time to spend.
Yeah, it's not, but it's good for you and them.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I have two more questions for you that are kind of burning in my mind.
Okay.
I don't want to skip over the fact that you talked about having a near-death experience when you had lost your baby prematurely. Mm-hmm. Will you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure, I can talk about that. It was she actually lived.
Oh, she did?
She did.
Oh, they praise God. That's amazing.
They didn't have time to do cesarean because I was bleeding so much. But it was luckily my third child, and she had something that some preemies have. She had a smaller head than normal. And the doctor pretty much was able to pull her out. I was dilated to 4 centimeters. And he got her out and they revived her.
Wow.
But during that, I knew I was dying. I knew I was dying. There was no question. I knew that's what was happening. And I all of a sudden was not in my body, but I was up above. And I could see there were a lot of people in the room. There was a team for the baby and a team for me. And so I could see all this. And I watched for a little while. And then all of a sudden, the only way I can explain it was I was going down a river very, very quickly, just down a river, very zoom down a river. All of a sudden, it just stopped. And I was in this place where there's not a word to describe the peace and the calm and it was from the inside out, it felt like. From the inside out, contentment, calm, joyful. There's really no words to it because it was such a big feeling. And about that time, my stepdaughter ended up getting drug into it because she was checking on me after a date. So it was late at night. And I told her I was in labor again. I'd been in the hospital like 3 days and gone in and out of labor. And actually, I'd been bleeding the whole pregnancy. I tore my placenta early on by picking my daughter up that got hurt on the cement, throwing her around my hip, felt a pop and started bleeding. And I had torn my placenta a little bit and it was low lying. So.
And what week were you in your pregnancy? Do you remember?
14.
Oh, wow.
When that happened.
Okay.
And I went and had an ultrasound. They said, well, it looks a little torn. Anyway, so I did bleed pretty much the whole pregnancy and then really went into labor when I was 7 months.
Okay.
Luckily, I was in the hospital when my placenta totally abrupted, or we wouldn't have made it, either one of us, if we'd been at home. But
so you're mentioning being in that, kind of went down the river, you're in this just place, euphoric. Yeah.
Yes, euphoric. Place. And they told my stepdaughter to scream my name in my ear.
And she was in the room with you, is what you're saying? Okay.
She was in the room. And she started screaming my name, and I heard her, but I didn't really want to go back. But then she kept screaming, and I thought, okay. Somehow I knew it wasn't right, or it wasn't my time. And I went back. But later, I thought a lot about this. Like, why wasn't I? I had a 3- and a 4-year-old at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, why wasn't I frantic? Because I had a 3- and a 4-year-old at home. And for me, that wasn't part of the experience. Like they weren't part of the experience when I was in that place where it was really calm.
Yeah. Was there any other humans part of the experience?
No, not for me. There weren't. I know people say sometimes that they see, their grandma or whatever, but I don't think I got that far because she started screaming. And I heard that.
And
it was
that
like it was way back, but I heard it.
Yeah.
And I thought, I have to go back.
Yeah.
But that helped me a lot when my husband died, because I was in Seattle with all the kids. He was in Florida on a business trip and had a massive heart attack and died. But that experience I went through gave me comfort that it's not hard to die.
Yeah.
And I wasn't all frantic, like I wasn't anywhere near him and wondering what he went through.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually thinking that same thing, that given the journey of your life after that moment, it seems like such a gift, even for you now.
Completely a gift, because right now, you know, I have no fear of death at all. And I know it will be wonderful. Yeah. You know, I want to stay here for my kids and my grandkids. And, you know, so as long as God can use me, He's got a purpose for me and a plan.
Yeah.
And we don't know the day we're going to go. We have no idea.
We don't. I just love that. I just want to voice how much I love your perspective and your encouragement of just really living each day to its fullest, no matter what you're facing. And also that calming peace that I can feel of really not having to worry about death and the next part. So that's really cool. My second question for you is around your book, because I always think that this is so fascinating when people decide to write a book. To me, it's quite an undertaking. And they always say things like, I've always wanted to write a book, or I always thought I should write a book, or people always tell me to write a book. And I just want to validate that that is not normal. Most of us don't walk around having these thoughts. And I think it's important to point out, because I believe whenever you have these thoughts like this, or people saying things to you like that, it really is like a whisper from God as to part of your calling and purpose on this planet. And I just don't want anyone who's had that experience to take it lightly, or to think, oh, everyone thinks this, because everyone does not think that. And if you've ever thought that or had people say that to you, I think it's worth pursuing, is kind of why I'm bringing it up. So will you tell us a little bit about your experience of getting to this point where you actually decided to write a book?
What happened was, I have a relative who sent me this link for a seminar called Women in Publishing. And it was like for four days of seminars all day long, and they would record them so you could watch them later if you didn't get them all in. But it wasn't very expensive. It was a little over $100. And I thought, you know, everybody's told me I should write a book. Maybe I'll just go to this, take this seminar and see what it's like. And so I just signed up. It took me a couple months to watch all of the sessions. And it was everything from copyright to how do you write, you know, how do you edit, and there's all kinds of people that could help you with these things. And I thought, well, I'm a horrible writer. My kids always tease me about their cards I give them. I don't write eloquent things in their cards. And they're like, Mom, write something really nice in there. I'm like, that's just me. So I actually hired a company, and I had a ghostwriter help me to begin with. But then as I was writing, what they told me, which really got me okay with doing it, they told me, you don't have to have it perfect. Just dump out of your head. Dump everything you can out of your head. Just get it on paper. Doesn't matter what format it's in. It doesn't matter what. You can always arrange it later and get it edited later. So I did. I just started writing. It was just coming through my fingers, like, you know, pouring out. I think, okay, I'll write for 15 minutes. And, you know, 3 hours later, I was just like, whoa, you know, that just came out. But one thing I did find out that I did not know is that a lot of people start writing, but they never get it to manuscript because They try and fix it first. They're so worried about what they're saying. Oh, I'm writing a book now, and I have to be really worried about the words I use and, you know, grammar and spelling and all that. And I was told by one person, no, just put it on the paper and someone else can help you clean it up. So that gave me freedom to just dump out of my head. And I just kept at it. It's a long process. It's a very long process where it goes through edit after edit after edit. You know, proofreading. I read it. I can't even tell you how many times I read through it. Just, and I'd find something each time that was, I needed to fix. So it's a long process. You have to have some commitment if you want to do it. But even just getting this stuff out of your head is very therapeutic. So in one part of my book, I had struggled with my stepson, Sean, passed away in 2021. And I really struggled with his the whole story. And it's in my book, but things that I went through during that. And eventually I realized I hadn't grieved my son. And so that was a completely eye-opening therapeutic thing about writing. And even if you don't write a book, if you're in crisis, writing things down really helps. Writing it out, you know, gets it out of your head onto paper. So it's more real. This is the way I'm feeling. You know, I don't understand why I'm feeling that way. And I had prayed about that because I had such angst about the way I was feeling. And I prayed about it. And then God kind of specifically pointed out to me that I had not grieved him.
That's, yeah, I think writing is, it's more valuable than we realize. It does a lot in our brain. It causes new neural pathways to form and to light up. And so it can be such a therapeutic practice to do. Well, what I can say about you is you are certainly diligent, persistent, and a committed person, because even your story about wanting to learn about being a private investigator and that required 2 years of school, right there, I'd be like, I'm out. Have to go to school for 2 years. I won't do that. So you're very committed.
This friend told me, Sue, if you want to investigate anybody, because that was after the con man. Yeah. And I thought, if I ever get anybody, they're going through the whole thing, whole investigation. And my friend said to me, Sue, just pay the $75, have them investigated. You don't have to get a degree to do that. But because
that's
I took a few classes, I really enjoyed going to school. I had my own business for years. And it just validated that I was doing things correctly.
Yeah. Well, and also I think it ties back into what you were talking about of finding things that you love. You know, you had discovered a new joy of learning in that. And I think that can be exciting, especially as you get older. It just that reminder for people, it's never too late. And if you find something that you're really interested in, it can be so joyful to sit and learn. You just want to gobble it up.
Yes. And so because I'm on chemo, you end up with chemo brain. You lose your brain cells too, in addition to every other cell. But they're all new. I get all new cells all the time because they're killing off my cells and they grow new. So that's a good thing. But I started doing language online just through Duolingo through the free thing. And so I did all the Italian and now I'm doing Spanish. I can't speak them, but I can sure read and write a lot of it. And I also started on an online piano thing just to make the connections in my brain.
Yeah. And are you finding joy in those things?
I am totally finding joy. Now, if I got frustrated, I would stop doing it, find something else. But
yeah. But, well, maybe you'll take a trip with your husband to Spain or Italy.
Oh, we just went to Spain last year. It was wonderful. Yeah. I would go there in a heartbeat again.
Yeah, Spain is gorgeous.
Yes.
Well, tell our listeners how they can connect with you, how they can find your book, and all of that.
Okay. My book is on Amazon or any other Barnes & Noble. It's in pre-sale right now, and it's on Amazon called Skidding into Heaven. Skidding into Heaven. And you can reach me at my website, SuzanneMurrayAuthor.com. When you go to the website, you will hit a page if you want to put your email in. And I created a 21-day positivity journal, and it's free for anyone who wants to sign up. It has a Bible verse, quote by a famous person, what to do positive, so that you can start your journey on being more positive one day at a time. It takes 21 days to change a habit, so I thought that would be good. And it's got a place to journal. So that's free to anybody that wants to sign up. If you don't want to sign up or go to that, you can just click on More About Suzanne Murray, and it'll take you to my website. And it's got the links, I think, to order the book, but you can go on Amazon, wherever. And it's a Kindle, paperback, or hardback.
Awesome. Well, I'll be sure to put all the links in the show notes for anyone that's wanting to connect with you. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. I just always trust that there is the right person out there listening that needed to hear it. I really had God press upon my heart in the past couple of weeks that I need to end my podcasts a little differently than I have been. And so with your permission, I'd love to just end this with a prayer.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that.
And then we'll say goodbye.
Yeah.
Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much for Suzanne. I thank you for her life. I thank you for her ups and her downs and how she's used each and every one of them to glorify and honor you and encourage others. I pray today that there is the specific woman listening that you wanted to just speak straight to her heart, to let her know she is not alone, and to give her hope. So we ask, Lord, that you would use this conversation to bless many, many lives. And we thank you so much for the time together. And we pray for healing, if that is in your will for Suzanne. And if it's not, Lord, we trust that you are going to give her everything she needs to live each day to its fullest until she is back in that euphoric place with you, Lord.
Oh, in thank Jesus you, Lord.
Name,
amen. Amen. Thank you.
I hope
so
you enjoyed
much.
Today's episode. If you're feeling blessed by the content here, the number one way you can show me is by leaving me a written review of the show. I'd be forever grateful. Knowing that you're out there listening helps me know that I'm truly living out God's purpose in my life. The other thing you can do is take a screenshot of this episode, share it with a friend, or better yet, tag me on your Instagram stories. Remember, you are seen, known, and loved. May God richly bless you today. All my love, Erin Jean.